islands there are forests and wild hills to which few men ever come, and where even the descent of a dragon may go unseen. But in the 90 isles there was screaming and disarray. Men rode westward among the little islands, crying, "Hide! Hide! The dragon of Pendor has broken his word! The archmage has perished, and the dragon is come devouring!" Without landing, without looking down, the great iron-colored worm flew over the little islands and the little towns and farms, and deigned not even a belch of fire for such small fry. So it passed over Gaeath and over Surd, and crossed the straits of the inmost sea, and came within sight of Roke. Never in the memory of man, scarcely in the memory of legend, had any dragon braved the walls visible and invisible of the well-defended isle. Yet this one did not hesitate, but flew on ponderous wings and heavily over the western shore of Roke, above the villages and fields, to the green hill that rises over Thwiltown. There at last it stooped softly to the earth, raised its red wings and folded them, and crouched on the summit of Roke Knoll. The boys came running out of the great house. Nothing could have stopped them, but for all their youth they were slower than their masters, and came second to the knoll. When they came, the patterner was there, come from his grove, his fair hair bright in the sun. With him was the changer, who had returned 2 nights before in the shape of a great sea osprey, lame-winged and weary. Long he had been caught by his own spells in that form, and could not come into his own shape again until he came into the grove, on that night when the balance was restored and the broken was made whole. The summoner, gaunt and frail, only one day risen from his bed, had come, and beside him stood the doorkeeper, and the other masters of the Isle of the Wise were there. They saw the riders dismount, one aiding the other. They saw them look about with a look of strange contentment, grimness, and wonder. The dragon crouched like stone while they clambered down from its back and stood beside it. It turned its head a little while the archmage spoke to it and briefly answered him. Those who watched saw the sidelong look of the yellow eye, cold and full of laughter. Those who understood heard the dragon say, "I have brought the young king to his kingdom, and the old man to his home." "A little farther yet, Kalesin," Ged replied. "I have not gone where I must go." He looked down at the roofs and towers of the great house in the sunlight, and he seemed to smile a little. Then he turned to Arryn, who stood tall and slight, in worn clothes, and not wholly steady on his legs from the weariness of the long ride and the bewilderment of all that had passed. In the sight of them all, Ged knelt to him, down on both knees, and bowed his gray head. Then he stood up and kissed the young man on the cheek, saying, "When you come to your throne in Havnor, my lord and dear companion, rule long and well." He looked again at the masters and the young wizards and the boys and the townsfolk gathered on the slopes and at the foot of the knoll. His face was quiet, and in his eyes there was something like that laughter in the eyes of Kalesin. Turning from them all, he mounted up again by the dragon's foot and shoulder, and took his seat reinless between the great peaks of the wings on the neck of the dragon. The red wings lifted with a drumming rattle, and Kalesin the eldest sprang into the air. Fire came from the dragon's jaws and smoke, and the sound of thunder and the storm wind was in the beating of its wings. It circled the hill once and flew off, north and eastward, toward that quarter of Earthsea where stands the mountain isle of Gaunt. The doorkeeper, smiling, said, "He has done with doing. He goes home." And they watched the dragon fly between the sunlight and the sea till it was out of sight.
The deed of Ged tells that he who had been archmage came to the crowning of the king of all the isles in the Tower of the Sword in Havnor at the world's heart. The song tells that when the ceremony of the crowning was over and the festival began, he left the company and went down alone to the port of Havnor. There lay out on the water a boat, worn and beaten by storm and the weather of years. She had no sail up and was empty. Ged called the boat by name, Lookfar, and she came to him. Entering the boat from the pier, Ged turned his back on land, and without wind or sail or oar, the boat moved. It took him from harbor and from haven, westward among the isles, westward over sea, and no more is known of him. But in the island of Gaunt, they tell the story otherwise, saying that it was the young king, Labanan, who came seeking Ged to bring him to the coronation. But he didn't find him at Gaunt Port or at Rhea Albi. No one could say where he was, only that he'd gone afoot up into the forests of the mountain. Often he went so, they said, and didn't return for many months, and no man knew the roads of his solitude. Some offered to seek for him, but the king forbade them, saying, "He rules a greater kingdom than I do." And so he left the mountain and took ship and returned to Havnor to be crowned.
The Farthest Shore by Ursula K. Le Guin is a Skyboat Road Company unabridged production released by Fantastic Audio. Read by the author and Scott Brick. Produced and directed by Stefan Rudnicki. Edited, mixed, and mastered by Kirk Miller.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.